God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. Is there anybody here tonight in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would just like to welcome you by first name. If you raise your hand, or let's see, I'm going to allow people to unmute themselves. I see Nick. Want to say hello? All right, we got Nick. Welcome, Nick. Anybody else? First 30 days. I see Leanne pointing. I see other people pointing. iPhone is waving. Is that what you're pointing at? You guys are allowed to unmute yourselves.
Okay, it wasn't letting me unmute myself.
There we go.
Hi, my name is Alyssa, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Alyssa. Welcome.
Hi, and we were not allowed to unmute ourselves for a moment. So
yeah, my fault. I'm wrong. You're right.
Hi, Kathy, alcoholic. I finally hit double digits today, guys. I'm on day 10.
All right. Welcome, Kathy. Anybody else? Alrighty then. So the Simple Actions Group wishes that we did that. The AA preamble, Alcoholics Anonymous, is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And tonight we're talking about steps 8 and 9. And please help me welcome our lovely panel tonight. We have Nathan and Steve all the way, Nathan from Richmond and Steve all the way from Florida. So I'm gonna start it up with a reading from the big book, and then we'll turn it over to the panel. So tonight we are gonna start on page 80. The chances are we have domestic troubles. Perhaps we're mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubt if in this respect alcoholics are fundamentally worse than other people, but drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. After a few years with the alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? The husband begins to feel lonely, sorry for himself. He commences to look around in the nightclubs or their equivalent for something besides liquor. Perhaps he is having a secret and exciting affair with the girl who understands. In fairness, we must say that she may understand, but what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he's married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him. Brother Nathan. Should be able to unmute yourself. Hold on. You're a co-host now. It's a well-oiled machine around Simple Actions, kids.
There we go. Thank you, David. My name is Nathan Isaacs, and I am an alcoholic. I'm not going to lie, not a ton of stuff is popping out at me in this paragraph, so I'll use this little bit of time to get the AA vitals out of the way. It is through strong sponsorship, the practice of the 12 steps, and a spiritual awakening as the result of practicing the 12 steps, a God that I do not understand, the fellowship, you know, all that stuff, that I have not found it necessary to take a drink or a drug since August 16th, 2017. So I just came up on an anniversary, and I mean, I never would have imagined life with or without alcohol when I came here. Had absolutely no plan on getting and staying sober. I was just in a lot of pain and absolutely willing to do anything that anyone asked me to stay sober, basically until I got off probation. I had absolutely no understanding of alcoholism, of the spiritual malady, of the obsession, of the phenomenon of craving, none of that. I truly believed I could just stay stopped for a little bit of time. I've never been able to do that. And then, you know, get off probation and we're going to be good to go. I have a home group. It is the Jaywalkers group. We meet Tuesdays for a big book speaker discussion meeting, and Fridays for an hour and a half speaker meeting. We would love to have any of you come out. So feel free to hit me up for the link. We are going to be on Zoom for a while, it looks like. And I have the honor and privilege of sponsoring other alcoholics. So, again, I, you know, not married, so don't have necessarily any, you know, firsthand personal experience with that, with this, but I have sponsored a lot of people that have been in this situation. You know, and it's hard for me to talk, just jump into this, you know, to the principles of step nine without kind of backtracking and talking about some of the stuff before. I was thinking in the shower right before, this meeting of, just my experience and just, you know, examining my experience in AA, and, you know, obviously it was very quick. Didn't dive right in, but, you know, I was just thinking about how awesome. I have a brand new guy that I'm working with that has never, ever, ever stepped foot in the rooms of AA. And it is so awesome because his mind is a clean slate. And one of the things that I hear a lot of people talk about with the steps, and especially with amends, is this idea that the steps are something you do. They are hurdles you cross. They are... you know what I mean? And that has absolutely not been my experience, but that is, you know, how they are talked about in treatment, even in meetings, even in good big book meetings. It's talked about this thing. And it really is like the 12 and 12 says, a set of principles that practice as a, you know, if practice expels the obsession and drink and makes us usefully whole. I'm obviously paraphrasing that. It's not word by word, which doesn't really matter that much in my experience, but, so yeah, I mean, these steps are not things that I do or I jump over. I mean, these are just principles that I have to try to live by that allow me to go from this, you know, like we agnostics talks about. If I could change one word in the big book, it would be, you know, lack of power is our dilemma. It's really lack of awareness of power. Everything that I already need, I came into AA with. This fundamental idea of God deep down within. And it's just all the stuff, the old ideas that are blocking me from my creator. So again, the steps aren't something you do. We don't check them off. It's not on to the next one. These are truly just principles. And if I can experience them with an open mind and an open heart, well, I'll just speak from my own experience. Because I was capable of doing that, God revealed himself to me. I took the actions and I got the results, even when I didn't understand what I was doing. So with amends, there are so many wonderful things in AA, you know, so many great tools and all this stuff. And, you know, I've seen a lot of damage created surrounding amends. I had someone with significant sobriety time make an amends to me because she didn't like me. You know, she came up to me and said, you know, right before my homework was like, Nathan, I don't like you. So there's my amends. I was fine, but, you know, I couldn't imagine being new or, you know, not having this conscious contact with God and having someone say that. But, you know, step eight really, you know, there's so much power in step eight and the willingness that I absolutely don't have on my own, that I absolutely need to begin to go out and live my purpose in life, which is to be of service to others. And nine is really, I mean, the purpose of amends is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to those around us. It's not for me to not feel guilty, that, which, you know, The ninth step promises are beautiful. That's a byproduct of the step, in my opinion, of the principles there. So, you know, most people that I work with, that they've been around AA, they look at it like, here's a list and we're going to check it off. And in my experience, it really only works for like financial amends. Those are the easiest. I can very clearly, I mean, to amend something is to fix it, to mend it back together. I don't know how I could possibly just take one action or cross off the name of my mother, who has bailed me out of jail several times, who showed up at the scene of my DUI, who was accosted by the police officers for her mothering because her drunk son was passed out in a gutter. There is not a thing I can do in a thousand lifetimes to, you know, make up for that. You know, the book also tells us earlier, when it comes to sex conduct, it is so easy for us to get way off the track with sex. But it gives us very clear directions. You know, we go to God, and he is the final judge. Our life doesn't necessarily have to make sense to other people. And this is really about, what is my gut telling me to do with this? You know, strong sponsorship is obviously important. I mean, it tells us to talk to others and all that fun stuff. So I need to remember that. We need to treat domestic troubles just like any other problem, because it is so easy to run to extremes with this stuff. Again, we have these principles in here that help guide us. God is the final judge being one of them. Talking to others that have experience is another one. You know, my personal experience, I mean, a lot of them, I wanted to run out and make amends to exes in my past, et cetera. And there's still some that I have not been able to make, people that don't want to see me. And it's really about God's timing with that. But I'm free, through the eighth step, because I have become entirely willing to go make that right. If God puts that person in my life and gives me the capacity to begin to fit myself to be of service to them, because their life may depend on these principles as my life does, or someone they know. And the last thing I ever want to do is run around creating harm and amends. And then someone 10 years down the road says, yeah, I'm not going to AA. That jerk Nathan just came to me and said a bunch of crap and then followed up with any action. You know, action is vital in this step. Words are so cheap. To quote one of my favorite bands, Depeche Mode. So if there are any Depeche Mode fans, hell yeah. But words are meaningless and forgettable. You know, sometimes we use words in this process, but I mean, this is truly about action. I don't know if I've gone over, so I'm going to hand it over to Steve to get some real heavy hitter sobriety.
Thanks, Nathan. Steve?
I'm Steve Farns with I'm Alcoholic. And, not to contradict my good friend Nathan in any way, because I'm sure I'm listening in a different context, but there are definitely some things we have to do. I mean, there are actions that we have to take, but I think that Nathan's kind of meaning it in a different context. One of the things that I always like to put out there, and Nathan and I have been close now for quite a while, is that these, you know, just like he was saying, these aren't hurdles that we graduate through. I look at them more like guardrails that kind of keep me on this path of awareness of this power. Like you mentioned, this power, you know, many people have different ideas of what God is, but this seemingly the one thing that seems consistent about all of them is that it's that God expresses himself in hundreds of forms of love. And so, that's good enough for me. I don't know what God is. I just know the expression of God, which is love. So I don't have to know what God is in order to be absolutely certain that God is. And following Nathan's lead, I'll just give you just a little bit of background. I'm 60 years old. I'm 31 years sober. I got sober in June of 89. I was 28 years old, and I was flying airplanes for the Navy, and they basically made it very clear that I was either going to drink or fly their airplanes, but I wasn't going to do both. So I went to rehab, and I haven't had a drink since then, but it was my first 7 years was very rocky because I didn't trust anybody. You know, I had a very serious, experience with a 40-something-year-old man from the time I was 10 till I was 17, where everybody in my family and friends thought that he was like my big brother and was taking care of me and being there where my parents didn't have time and that kind of thing. But what they didn't know was it was a very predatory type relationship. And as a result of it, I almost, it's like I learned a technique on how to take advantage of people who had a weakness for young boys and eventually young men. And so it's like I had this constitution, if you will, that people cannot be trusted and they all have ulterior motives. And so it was very difficult for me to find a sponsor that I trusted when I got sober. And so I had one by name only. You know, I'd point at him, but really he was just there in order to get you guys to stop asking if I had a sponsor or not.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you that when I was 7 years sober, after I literally destroyed every good thing in my life, going to meetings and not drinking, I found a sponsor that actually introduced me to the 12 steps in a way that is God dependent through service to others, and everything else that I do is intended to enhance my ability to be of service to others. I will tell you this before I forget. One of the most powerful amends I made was the amends to that man who molested me when I was little. That's kind of the reason why, one of the reasons why I brought it up. My part in it as a 10-year-old, even as a 17-year-old, was so minute comparison to his part, because I was a child, you know. But 100% of what disturbed me was caught up in that little tiny part that I had in it. And the reason why I know that is just because I cleaned up my little tiny part with no expectation of him cleaning up his part. And I got 100% free. All my hatred and disgust towards him turned into compassion and wishing I could help him and feel, you know, and, when I listened to him explain, because I was told by my sponsor to let him talk and don't interrupt him, I realized that his issue with young boys was, pretty much the same as my issue with drugs and alcohol and sex with adults. So in other words, we had the same exact condition. It was just our drug of choice, you know, and unfortunately his drug of choice, there's no help for him because we live in a world that can't accept that. And, you know, and I understand that too, because we're very protective of our children, as we should be. So anyways, what my sponsor introduced me to when I was 7 years sober is that this condition, this spiritual yearning that I have to be okay, is a normal, natural condition. So I'm not talking about the physical allergy and the mental obsession. I'm just talking about that spiritual yearning. And what I found was that what I believe today, because of my exam and experience for the last three decades, is that we are designed to be a service to God and help others. And the reason why I believe, it has to be from my heart, not my ego. And the reason why I believe that is the same reason why I believe that we're designed to eat food and drink water and breathe air and find shelter and get rest and exercise. Because when I do those things, I feel healthy. And when I don't do those things, I don't feel healthy. But I needed to be shown how to do that. That I did not. If there were people in my life growing up that were showing me how to do that, I was not paying attention. Let's just put it that way. And so when he told me about the amends, you know, and what we're really trying to do is just kind of mend relationships back to, what they're originally designed for. And so the things that I'm removing, and being cautious that I don't cause more harm, are basically what can I do to remove whatever is between us without putting more in between us. So that if that person ever needed help along spiritual lines, they'd be free to come to me along those lines, recognizing that 99.999% of the time, these people are never going to, you know, come to me for spiritual help. I just need to make sure that avenue is not blocked, that that avenue is open. And so I don't want to put anything else in between it. And another thing that Nathan kind of touched on that I really am a big fan of is, you know, one of my favorite Dr. Bob quotes is, he said, carry this message as a last result or as a last resort. If all else fails, use words. Right. In other words, the words are the poorest form of communication that we have. They, what people say and what I hear are very often two different things. I too have had some unfortunate experiences with people when they've come to, you know, make amends, and honestly, they caused more harm by the way they did it, you know, and I think that the most effective way to make an amends to somebody is without any words at all, just by the way I treat them. And I can show them by my actions. That's the ideal situation. I show them by the way I live, by the way I treat them, that this is the person I used to be. This is where I caused you harm. I want to do anything I can to make it right. You know, and what can I do? And I want to be there for you if you ever need me. And honestly, I can say that so much more effectively just by the way I treat people and by being there, provided that we're running in the same circles. If we're not running in the same circles and they don't get to witness that, then I might need to, you know, resort to some words and in whatever form that takes. But for the people closest to me, like the story you just read, you know, it's like, how do you make that right? I mean, what words can that guy possibly say to his wife that are going to, restore or mend that relationship? And then of course, there's always the possibility that, you know, he's going to come up with all these great words and she's going to get her hopes up, but then he doesn't change his behavior. And now she's absolutely never going to want to hear anything he has to say again. You know, so I believe that the verbal amends is by far the most recklessly used tool in Alcoholics Anonymous, with no close second. And the real shame about it all is it's usually always done by direction of what I consider to be poor sponsorship. The new guy's just doing what his sponsor told him to do. And I find that just a shame. So that's all I got for now. Thanks.
All right. We are going to continue on page 81. If we have no such complication, there's plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear the alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom for years he has so shockingly treated. Passing all understanding is the patience mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken. Sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He is like the farmer who came out of the cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing?" Nathan.
Thank you, David. Excuse me. Let me find it real quick. Yeah, this is again another thing that I hear pretty frequently in meetings. And like Steve was talking about, people go, you know, following the directions of a sponsor. Like, I can't tell you how many times at a gratitude meeting that I've heard people say, "I'm making my amends by showing up sober at Thanksgiving or Christmas." And it reminds you, if anyone's ever listened to any of Mickey Bush's talks, like he tells a story of, you know, he tells his mom he's been sober for 18 years and she's like, "So's the bloody cat." You know, like, what's the big deal? You know, that me doing what I should have been doing all along is not repairing. And thank you, Steve, for, elaborating on what I said. I was a blackout drinker and I'm a blackout speaker. So sometimes I have no idea what's coming out of my mouth, but there is absolutely a ton of things we can do. I think, you know, I heard people say God is in the coffee pot when I got here and I didn't understand what that meant. And, you know, it is about being of service, of faceless service to as many people as possible, doing good without any recognition. And, I mean, and just truly living that way of life. So yeah, just being sober is not me making an amends. I just want to throw that out there. I hear that all the time. That hasn't been my experience. I'm glad that Steve mentioned that Dr. Bob quote, because that is so true. You know, I mean, sometimes we do have to use words, but there is plenty we can do. I mean, and obviously, you know, when it goes on to say, certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. So don't get me wrong. I mean, yes, that is vital. These principles seem to work a lot better when, you know, with people that I work with when they're sober, you know. But just being sober, like it says, we are still a long way from making good to the people, you know, especially the women in our life. I mean, my poor mother has taken, you know, she just took the whole, just the brunt of all of my alcoholism, you know, bailed me out of jail several times. I mean, finding me in every sort of condition possible. And a lot of that, I mean, obviously the jail happened once I started drinking, but I mean, the way that I treated her just so, like, so shockingly, a lot of that was going on long before I ever picked up a drink. Like, that's why I really know at depth that this condition that I have, drunk or sober, I can create just as much harm. And there's nothing worse than a sober amends when you're acting out this way, and you have to go clean that up sober. I mean, it's humbling, which I need that because my ego gets through the roof. The alcoholic ego can rebuild itself in 30 minutes. You know, I have to live this way of life. I can talk about it. I can theorize it. Another Dr. Bob quote is, the hard way to do AA is just don't drink and go to meetings. I don't find that to be effective for the real alcoholic that has that hole in the soul and doesn't get better when they stop drinking. So I can go on forever about these last few sentences. You know, the past and all understanding is the patient mothers and wives, and the patients mothers and wives have had with alcoholics, just from alcoholics in my own life. You know, it is really, you know, it has shown me and taught me really how to rely on God, just having alcoholics in my life. And I can go on and on for a long time on that. I'm not going to. But absolutely, if it had not been for my mom, I would have been homeless, stayed in jail. I mean, all that other stuff. You know, my sponsor, Danny, who was sponsored by Steve, you know, he definitely gave me some very clear cut directions on things I need to be doing. Showing up in her life, asking, you know, just not even asking what I can do, just doing it. You know, God knows, like, I am great at doing stuff for other people, but I need everyone in the room to know that I'm doing it. You know, it is absolutely, I mean, like, I love in the third step when it talks about giving to get. Like, I absolutely, when I did something kind or was of service to someone, it was absolutely for my ego, to get something from you. Like, what's in it for me? So, you know, motives absolutely matter. And, you know, phone calls. I mean, there's so many different things. I mean, each situation is unique, but I mean, those are some of the things he had me do. You know, bringing food over, sitting down with her, shutting my big mouth when it comes to, you know, contentious, controversial issues. Let her speak. Don't interrupt. It's things like that. Things that I just naturally on my own just, you know, don't tend to do. So I'm going to pass it over to Steve.
All right, Steve.
So, and you know, reiterating what Nathan just said, as well as what the writer about and the wind stop blowing. You know, I you know, the problem with what I hear in meetings with this thing called living amends is twofold. One is that like he said, you know, being the kind of person I should have been all along, I definitely want to be doing that. That is absolutely something that we want to do. Calling it an amends is not only a butchering of the English language, because it's not mending a thing, but more important than that is it it tends to give me a free pass. And it's a free pass that I don't want. You know, I don't ever want to forget that I could live 50 lifetimes and not not make things right with my mother, you know? And to give you an idea of how selfish I am and how much of a victim I am of this type of thinking of Anik Brand, the wind stopped blowing. When I did my fourth and fifth step with my sponsor, and I went through all my resentments and fears and sex conduct and such, and we're getting it all there, and then he sends me off to write my eight-step list, and I come back with my eight-step list, and we're going through all of that, you know, and the majority of it came off my fourth. When all was said and done, I'm sitting there thinking about, oh my God, I am oblivious to how selfish of a human being I really am, how self-consumed, how, you know, fear-driven, how, you know, it was just mind-blowing to me. And I was not happy about it, but at the same time, I was happy that I was able to finally see it, or to see what the real problem was. Because when he told me that my problems were always within me, they were self-centered in nature, and they were driven by hundreds of forms of fear, but I didn't think so. He said to me, that's really good news, Steve, because you can change you. You know, you can't change these other people. And if my problems were of the making of anybody besides myself, then I would be totally dependent upon their cooperation to get to the solution. And they're not cooperating, you know, and in most cases. And even if they would, it wouldn't matter because they're not the maker of my problems to begin with. And so I'm getting all this and it's fitting in my heart and I'm seeing it. And I'm just like, wow. And then just like somebody just took a fist and just punched it down into my gut where I live, he says, what about your mother? I can't think of a human being that I have hurt and harmed more than my mom. And I totally forgot to put her on my list. I completely left her off my list. And I just couldn't, that in and of itself just drove this down deep into my soul. So anyways, I'll leave it at that for now so we can read the next thing.
Awesome. Thank you. We'll continue on page 83. Yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we're sorry won't fill the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone. Nathan?
Thank you, David. And one thing I just wanted to throw out there before we jump into this is someone very close, and I'll just, you know, in a general way, try to speak on this just for a second, but someone very close in my life drank after a little bit of sobriety. And, you know, I was talking to my sponsor, kind of told her right away. And one of the first things that she's told me was, you are going to get a firsthand look of just a glimpse of what you put your mother through. And if anything, I mean, this really is the whole situation. I have to keep in God's hands and just keep staying busy helping his kids. But if anything, I'm so grateful for just a shift in my perception that this has given me. Nothing in God's world happens by mistake. But so again, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. I mean, I totally identify when people in the rooms talk about, for some reason, I have always believed that I am just supposed to feel great always. And if I do not feel great always, I need like that to feel great again. And, you know, this process is, I mean, it is a long period of reconstruction. Another humbling thing, you know, experience that I absolutely needed. My mother, she had an accident last year, I believe. Yeah, 2019, at the, you know, end of the year, and broke a bunch of bones in her arm. And, you know, she called me. I ran over to the emergency room and all that stuff. And, you know, she was given narcotics. And she accused me of taking them. First of all, I never touched opiates. I just wasn't a fan. I'm a amphetamine and vodka person myself. I see that double fist, David. Yeah. But, it just reminded me of how much, I still need to, how much reconstruction is still needed, that at 2.5 years sober, she is still, doubtful of my sobriety, and not because of my lack of action. It's just, I mean, when the way that I drink and drug, I mean, you're witness that from, you know, when I start to when I got sober at 25, I mean, her coming to, you know, my bedside in a hospital, almost dying of alcoholism in my early 20s. Again, picking me up from the jail, the bailing me out. I mean, all the stuff that she didn't sign up for, there is a long period of reconstruction. And the beautiful thing is I didn't get mad that she asked me that question. And another beautiful thing is I really believe that AA had to come first always. I remember at 1.5 years sober, I was, you know, taking like, you know, a bunch, you know, working with a bunch of new people. The number doesn't matter. That's my ego talking, is I want to say how many people I'm working with. But I called my brother. He was in town and he asked me, or I asked him if he wanted to get lunch, dinner, something like that. And he said, Nathan, why would I make plans with you? You're going to cancel for someone in AA. And it was just a absolute took the, you know, the breath out of me. And he was dead right. You know, I will practice these principles in all of my affairs unless I need to carry this message to the other alcoholics. And my sponsor, Valerie, has, you know, from the second she started sponsoring me and I told her what I do in AA, how I, you know, live this way of life. I mean, she was made it very clear, you will pay a very high price for that. And I have, but anyways, I'm sorry, should never come out of our mouth in an amends. I mean, it's very clear right here. And I love this direction. We must take the lead. I can't tell you how many people I work with that, you know, like it talks about later, their defects may be glaring. But if I am the one tasked with changing, if God is in my life and working in my life and through me, I have to take the lead. It doesn't matter what they have done or not done. That is a very clear cut direction. I must begin to, you know, to initiate and to take the action and to live this way of life, regardless of whether it's reciprocated to me or not. I mean, that's been incredibly difficult, especially, you know, with, I mean, my family is all over the place in terms of religion, political backgrounds, all that other stuff. And, you know, I'm so grateful. I mean, my first inventory, the biggest thing that happened was I, like Steve was talking about, I am the maker of all my own problems. When I'm disturbed, the problem is always within me. I came to see those things as principles, meaning they apply equally to everyone. And I know that is true, but my resentments and my anger towards how I was raised, you know, the oppressive Southern Baptist household that I grew up in, all of that melted away instantly. And I know that that truly was blocking me of being a service to them. There's no way that, I mean, if that had not been removed, that I could have gone and showed up consistently with all of them down each other's throats. And I'm in there just doing the dishes and taking the dogs out. And I have genuine serenity. Yeah. And in this prayer, I try to, you know, say this every morning. I obviously miss it sometimes, but, I ask God to give me patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. I take this prayer, this meditation with, you know, with me throughout the day. You know, how can I really live in, you know, in these expressions of your love, you know, cause that's really what this is all about. And I mean, it is the actions that I take to fit myself, to be of service, to those that are in my life. I did have a talk with my family, because there were, you know, there was theft on my part and, you know, I did have to sit down and, but my sponsor, Danny, made it very clear. You don't need to go into all of these sordid details of the depravities of your alcoholism. Like I didn't need to tell my, you know, my mom that, you know, as a teenager, I'm throwing up from so much alcohol and I'll pop some Adderall and then I'll puke them. I'll take them out of the throw up and swallow them again. Like, they don't need to hear that. They don't need to hear the disgusting things that I'm doing. Anyways, I think that's all I have, so I'm going to pass it to Steve.
All right, Steve?
I didn't really need to hear that either, Nathan, just so you know.
No, it was disgusting. As it was coming out, I was like, oh, God.
All right, so two things. One is I think that the, just prayer and the line right before, it just emphasizes that this is not something that you're going to sit down at one conversation and then be done with it and be free. Now the slate's wiped clean. It's something that you're going to do consistently, and you got to keep, love in your heart. That's what prayer is all about. It's about getting that God awareness and that love inside your heart. And then one of the things too that I wanted to mention, mostly because of what Nathan said, more than that passage in the book, was that somewhere along the lines, a long time ago, I'm very grateful for this. I learned that I'm supposed to be of service to my brothers and sisters, not just the ones that are in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so the same, I treat people outside of AA the same way I treat people inside of AA. So I don't see the difference. Matter of fact, my two favorite words in the 12 traditions is as such, right? It says Alcoholics Anonymous as such. I think it's on Never Be Organized or something. But either way, the as such, I interpret that as Alcoholics Anonymous, whatever that is, right? Because the truth is it's a different experience for different people. And I'm not here to say that my way is the right way for anybody or any, I think not only do I think AA allows it, I think they celebrate it in the traditions to where everybody has to, kind of has their own path. Now the principles don't change, and the way to get aware of those principles, I don't really think changes either, whether we do it on purpose or by accident, we get these awarenesses. I mean, sometimes we get an awareness and we're like, oh my God, how did that happen? But these principles apply equally to all people. If it's not about the drink, it's not about sobriety time, and it's not about your participation in Alcoholics Anonymous by any means. It's they're about principles for living. And so I haven't had a problem for a long time with treating anybody different because they're in AA or they're not in AA. Now, there are some people that come to me that are not in AA that ask me for some help. I took my 9-year-old niece through these steps. She's not 9 anymore. But the only thing that was really different principle-wise is, thank God I got to skip the sex conduct list. But it was kind of funny, too, because I had these papers for resentment, fears, and sex conduct with the three columns and stuff. And I never took a 9-year-old to the steps before, right? And so my sister asked me to do it because she had her in Alateen or something. But I'm going through these papers, and I'm thinking as I'm talking to her, my niece, and I want to rip that paper off the back, but I don't want her to notice that I'm doing it. But sure enough, she sees me do it, and she goes, what's that? Right. Cause I'm crumpling it up and throwing it away. I have so many nieces and nephews. I learned a long time ago that the truth is always easier, right? You just get past it. So I said, that's the sex conduct list as for adults. And she goes, ew. And I'm like, that's the answer I was looking for. Thank you. Right. So anyways, the point I'm trying to make though is that these principles apply to all people equally, and anybody that comes to me, in any kind of a receptive mode, my responsibility to God is to be there for that person, period. All right, thanks.
Awesome. We're going to continue on page 83. There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would write them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. And there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases, but we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. Nathan?
I'm gonna try to go quickly so we can try to get it all in. Yeah, there are a lot of wrongs I can never fully make right. And, you know, and I'm given the power to be okay. You know, in this, through our inventory through 6 and 7 and through step 8, that willingness, like I said, I mean, there are still some amends that I cannot make. I don't know how to find them. I've tried. And they really are in God's time. I had a really awesome experience of that fairly recently where I was going in to get my phone fixed, and the first person on my amends list was working at this phone repair place. We chatted very briefly. I didn't run into, you know, his business, his place of work, and say, I need to make amends. I mean, you know, that would be incredibly selfish. But I gave him my number and I said, if you ever need anything, I would love to, you know, I made myself available in a general way. You know, I prayed and asked God to speak through me and flow through me and just trusted that still voice. I mean, this really, God sets the stage and we play the part. That's just been my experience. There are some valid reasons for postponement, and I've seen that with a lot of people that I have taken through the steps. I'm not going to get into each specific one, but, again, this is about becoming aware of God, and we will absolutely be directed and guided and given what we need. It's like what it talks about earlier in our book. He provides what we need if we stick close to him and perform his work well. You know, if I truly, like Steve was just talking about, my job is to be of service. AA really is just about love and service, God awareness and service. So I'm going to shut up and let Steve talk.
All right, Steve.
Yeah, I, so I had a wife for a very short amount of time right before I got sober. And, I remember, you know, during that time period when I first got sober, where I had a sponsor by name only. So I was basically getting my guidance and my direction from groups of people, taking what I liked and leaving the rest type of thing. And I tried to make an amends to my wife over the phone. She had already left. So she was in Florida and I was in Maine. And I spoke to her and called her names that I hope to God I'd never, ever treat another human being in my life. Probably one of the most embarrassing things because of the way she, you know, didn't respond the way I expected her to respond. And then I eventually gave her the time that she needed. I drop her a few, I've moved around a lot. And so I would, you know, send her an occasional birthday card and, these kinds of things mostly just to make sure that she knew how to get a hold of me if she ever decided she wanted to talk to me. And, 18 years later, she allowed the conversation, and I'm telling you, it was worth every second of that 18 years of waiting. And because I was willing the whole time, I was still able to be free that whole 18 years. And I remember the letter that I wrote her that she actually responded to. I was saying something that she goes, Steve, I got your letter, and I got to tell you, I have no clue what you're talking about. So I got 18 years worth of me being a monster, just growing in my head. And she's like, I remember you being nothing but kind and nice to me. We just never should have been married. And I'm like, so the reason why I didn't contact you for 18 years is because I had a new husband and he didn't like the idea of me talking to my ex-husband. And I'm like, oh, that never would occur to me. I'm glad I waited 18 years. It's just crazy. But anyway, so sometimes we just have to wait. But if we have that willingness in our heart, the genuine willingness between me and God, I can still be free, and if time will take care of it, and we'll get it done eventually. These are principles for living. It's not an event. So that's all I got there. Thank you.
Right on. All right, we've come to the last paragraph of the evening, and probably about 2 minutes each. Page 83. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see that our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. Nathan.
I'll try to keep it short and sweet. You know, our bedevilments on page 52 describe my internal condition without this awareness of power. And this is like my internal condition with the awareness of power. That's how it was explained to me by my sponsor, Valerie. When I think about the spiritual experience that alcohol created within me, alcohol did all these things for me for a very long time. I mean, the problem is we begin to pay a higher and higher and higher price, and we are so obsessed with alcohol and drugs, and really any human power does for us, we can no longer see what it is doing to us. So all of these things have come true for me. And it is not always in the people that I work with, it is not always right after I'm making an amends. You know, for me, it came a little bit after. We will be amazed before we are halfway through. Another kind of thing I hear a lot in meetings that I just hasn't been my experience is I've heard, you know, many people say you got to finish half your amends or X number of amends or et cetera before we can go into the next step. And this is telling us we are already going to be amazed before we're even halfway through. We're going to get freedom. We're going to be able to see God and feel God. And when we start to feel that, it is vital that I start giving it away. I have to. My life depends on that. So, Steve?
I'll just finish up by saying that, you know, this is a lot of people get, seems to like they get their relief in their fourth and fifth step. They get, you know, free of some of their secrets. They get to put things into perspective, maybe. I personally didn't really come to AA. AA with a ton of secrets. It wasn't like I was telling everybody everything, but there was always somebody that knew everything, you know, something about me. And so I didn't really get much relief in four and five. If anything, I just kind of was disgusted with myself. But where I got the majority of my relief was in the ninth step, when I actually cleaned up these relationships, you know, and basically got set free because, you know, I was aware of what the harm was, what the behavior that needed to be changed was, and I knew that I didn't have to feel guilty and shameful about what I did with these people because I got to be able to set things right. So the ninth step was gigantic for me. It was where I got most of my. Actually, I think it's a promise there, and right after the ninth step, where it says this. Now it's time to grow in understanding and effectiveness, as it leads into the tenth step. That's where I got the majority of my understanding and effectiveness, and it came in the heart before it came in the intellect. Thank you.
Ah, thank you both so much. What an amazing meeting. All right, I'm going to pass the Seven Tradition Basket virtually. There's a PayPal link in the chat. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the Seven Tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Your safety is important. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Are there any announcements tonight for the good of AA? Anybody? All right. We got our Sunday night, Simple Actions has our Sunday night speaker, Ask It Basket meeting coming up next Sunday. Can't remember who's speaking, but it's going to be awesome. And then this Friday night, we've got an AA history workshop going on with District 14 and in conjunction with the Candlelight meeting at the same time and place as the Candlelight meeting. So if you click in there at 8 o'clock, you'll be part of this little workshop. We got JS from Los Angeles is going to do a presentation on Bill Wilson's spiritual journey, 1955 to 1970. And then there'll be a Q&A period. So that's coming up this Friday. All right, anybody else? Nobody? I don't see anybody. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be available at this table. See, this is our format for when we're meeting in the church. We'll all be in this room after this meeting hanging out. So if you need a sponsor, please stick around. If you're shy, feel free to send an email to info@simpleactions.net. In closing, I'd like to thank the panel again for sharing. That was wonderful. Thank everyone who participated, our co-host, for you for being here. And let's see, I'm going to share my screen one more time and ask one of the home group members maybe to jump in and read the last technically three paragraphs on page 164.
Thanks, David. I've got that.
Thanks, Malcolm.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditations what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something that you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody. Let's go ahead and virtually circle up and hold hands. I believe everyone has the privilege of unmuting, so you'll have the opportunity to thank our speakers after we pray. Moment of silence to do with as you wish. Our Father.
Who art in heaven,
hallowed
be thy name.
Thy kingdom come.
Thy will be done.
On earth. Give us this day our daily bread.
And forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us.
And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Amen.